So today we're going to do a training video on exploratory analysis using R. We'll talk a little bit about the data set that we're going to use. I've made it available. It's on a SQL server. But most importantly, it's water flow data. It's from a prototype that I built, and it collects water flow information. So we're going to talk a little bit about why that's even important to begin with. So over here, you can see what looks like a pool pump, because it is. There's a pool right over there. So this pool pump, if you open this valve right here, this guy, go ahead and open that valve, you see water kind of comes out, gushes some more, comes out. That is draining my pool. And then there's all this other knobs and stuff. So we've got something that goes to what says a skimmer and a main. Right now it's on the skimmer. It goes and does all the pumping stuff. I don't really know exactly what it does, but that's not entirely the point. The point is that it sometimes doesn't do what you want, and it starts putting water out in places you don't want it to go. Now, there's other things that can happen, and those things are like when I was teaching at University of Miami, some students came in and they smelled terrible. They smelled like just straight poo. And the reason they smell like poo is because somebody got the bright idea to stick a bunch of stuff in the toilet, so they're not supposed to stick in the toilets. So what happened is that all that stuff that they stuck in the toilets collected, and it collected with all the other things that students stuck in toilets that they're not supposed to stick in toilets, which caused a really nasty clog. And so that started to flood the bottom floors, because your incoming water doesn't know about your outgoing water. So if you have a surplus of water coming into your system, well, you might end up with a pretty nasty clog and a lot of poo coming up through the water line. So, you know, the outlet on your bathtub might start filling back up with poo. And unfortunately, that's what happened to these students. So here's an interesting looking little contraption. So this is a little prototype that I built, and this is where the data is coming from that we're going to analyze today. So what we can see on the inside of this is, let's go ahead and open it up, is there's, voila, a water pump. Let's see if we can really get in there and take a look at it. That's a water pump, and it's basically just a smaller version of what we had over on the other side. So coming up from the water pump, we have two valves, or two paths that the water can go through. We have this left side, which has a valve. Right now you can see the valve, very similar to the other valve, is turned off. If we open it by turning the knob there, it's on, and the water can now flow down both sides. So let's go ahead and turn it off. And so over on this side, the water kind of flows through, and it comes over to this interesting looking device. And this device right here is a flow meter, and it can tell us how many liters per minute are going through that particular sensor. You've got three different cables here. You have a black one, a red one, and a yellow one. And, you know, red is power, black is ground, yellow is the magic signal wire. So we'll trace this over here, and we can see that the signal wire is hooked up with the Raspberry Pi, and the Raspberry Pi has a Wi-Fi dongle attached to it, and that allows us to post the data stream up to Azure. So I've already gone ahead and done the stream and moved it all over, and we dropped it into SQL. What's really cool, SQL Server 2016 now has R coming on server, and that's kind of why we're doing this R analysis. If you're not learning R and you plan to do data analysis, you probably should start. So this is my first attempt at trying R as well, and I figured we'll do some data exploration with R, kind of like I do with my F-sharp series, and that's what we're going to start doing. So before we get started, I'm going to create a new virtual machine in Azure. You don't necessarily need to do this step. This is just for me to show the installation of the tools. So if you don't have this tools, this might be good to follow along with. We're just going to start off by logging into Azure and creating a new virtual machine. Find it to be just a good experimentation environment. So we'll go ahead and navigate to azure.com and go to the portal. And from here, you're going to click on virtual machines. Something that's kind of neat that I didn't realize is that Microsoft has released a data science virtual machine. It has a variety of tools already installed, for example, R, Python, and it looks like it has the notebooks as well for Spark. So it's kind of a neat thing. So we'll go ahead and just start off with that guy. So if you enter search data science, you'll find the Microsoft provided data science virtual machine. And we're going to kind of cruise through these settings a little bit quicker. The important ones for you to know are the name of the virtual machine, the username, and the password. The other really important setting for you to do is the size of the virtual machine. In this instance, we're going to use a D1. It's a good balance between performance and cost. You've got everything from, you know, A series shared core, very small memory, all the way up to, I don't even remember how many cores, and I think the big thing was just terabytes of memory. It's just this absolutely insane virtual machine that I'm never going to use in the near future. But for these purposes, we're just going to go ahead and use the D1. So the rest of these settings, we're going to pretty much just cruise through. So once we're done and the virtual machine has been created, it's going to open up this kind of new view for us. It's going to open a few blades. And in the middle blade where you see the name of the virtual machine that we created, our Channel 9 demo, there is a connect button underneath the name. If you click the connect button, it's going to download a file that we can open. This is a remote desktop file. This is going to create a new session on the virtual machine. And we can log into it and begin using it this way. So again, if you choose to do this on your own laptop, these are steps that you could totally have skipped. Otherwise, I find it really good for not gunking up my laptop with a bunch of new tools that I may or may not use. So it takes a few minutes to log into the machine and get it initially spun up and going. But after all that's done, we're going to go ahead and search for RStudio. What you're going to find is that RStudio itself is not already installed. Yeah, I thought the data science virtual machine would have RStudio installed. No, it just has R installed and not RStudio. So we're going to have to navigate to the RStudio website and begin that full installation. The installation of RStudio and R are probably steps that if you're using your own computer, you will need to begin. So now that we're in a fresh machine, these are the steps that you will have to do to ensure that your development environment is set up for doing R development. So the RStudio installation is a pretty straightforward install. Basically just accept all the defaults and you won't go wrong. It takes just a few minutes, and once it's done installing, it's ready to use. Do note that on the virtual machine that I chose, the data science machine, R was already installed. You'll notice on the RStudio website that it says, if you do not have R installed, install it here. And there's a link provided on the word here. You click that and follow the instructions and you can install R from there. So once R has been installed, what we want to do is, once RStudio has been installed, what we want to do is open RStudio. In this instance, we can search for RStudio. I'm going to go ahead and pin it to the taskbar and run it from the taskbar. Once RStudio does come up, what we'll want to do is go over to the new button for scripts and do new script. This will allow us to type code into a window that we can save as a file and then execute that code by highlighting the code and clicking Control Enter. Or if you're on a particular line of code, you can simply put your cursor on that line and type Control Enter, and it will execute that code in the console. R seems to be more of a scripting type environment for programming as opposed to your traditional write code, compile, execute kind of format. It's very similar for my F-sharp community followers, kind of like your F-sharp script files with the FSI. So the first thing that we want to do is install this package RODBC. What this is the ODBC packages for the language R. It allows you to connect to a variety of different database databases. It's a database connector. So first we install the packages and then we require those packages be used in our current R session. This is going to allow us to create the connection to the SQL Azure database that I have already dumped the Waterflow telemetry data into that we will be analyzing. So what we'll do is hit Control Enter on each one of these lines, and that will bring in the packages as well as install the packages for RODBC. And you can see in the console some of the output being displayed from executing those lines of code. The next thing that we're going to do is actually create a new data connection. So if you look at this long line of code, line 5, we're creating a data connection using ODBC driver connect. This allows us to establish a custom connection. This particular connection string is a connection to a SQL Azure database that I've made available using these credentials for anybody to use. Again, like all the data sets that I make available for training purposes, please do not delete it. Please use it only for your own experimentations and following these training videos. I've opened them up completely and totally, so please use them accordingly. So we actually can see, if you're new to the R language, we've got this arrow character pointing at the D. What's that saying is to store the result of the ODBC driver connection function into a new variable that we have defined named D. So executing that, you can see in the right-hand side inside of environment, there's a new value D. It's of class RODBC, and it has a few little bit more information regarding that. That is, in fact, the variable or object that is holding our RODBC connection. So the next thing that we want to do is just take a look at some of the columns that I've made available. So if we execute the function SQL columns, pass it the connection, plus the name of the table within the database we want to talk to, and hit Control Enter on that line, you'll see that the output on the console contains all of the columns available to us. So we have things like the ID of the telemetry event, the location of the telemetry event, what the water flow was as a liter per minute value in a float format. We also have the collection time. What you'll find is that in a lot of the IoT scenarios, you're doing mostly time series analysis. So the combination of collection time and water flow, in this particular instance, since we only have one device and one location, are of significant importance to us. Now, the aggregation of location, device, a sensor, as far as it corresponds to a full map of the device ecosystem, may in fact become important, and you can do better analysis. But for our purposes today, we're just using one device, one sensor, one incoming telemetry value. Really makes kind of this whole session a lot easier. So next thing we want to do is get all the data into a variable for us that we can then begin manipulating. So we're going to create a new variable called flows. Now this as.dataframe, what this does is it's a function that takes values and converts it into a data frame for us, which you can think of sort of like a table. You have just columns and rows, and the SQL fetch function comes in as part of the RODBC package, and we're using the connection that we already established, and we're getting all the data from the water flows table and we're storing that as a data frame into flows. And you can see the in the right-hand side in the environment section, it'll give you a sample of the values in the columns that you get. So our flows variable is a data frame which contains ID, location, water flow, collection time, device ID, and sensor ID. This is our schema that I created in SQL Azure, and that's all of the pertinent data for us. So you can see that the IDs are 33, 34, 35, they're sequential. The water flow is going to be a series of float values. The collection time is going to be the exact timestamp that we found it. Device ID is PG kit 1, and then the sensor is of the taxonomy device ID, sensor type, and then sensor connection channel. So on the actual physical device, it has to connect to a particular pin. That's the channel it's connected to. So you can see that this series of telemetry is coming from our PG kit device. It's a flow sensor and it's connected to channel 18. The next thing that we're going to do is just type the word flows. This will display into the console all of the data that we have in flows. It's going to be every value of the 6,071, and at the very bottom you can see that it's reached the threshold and it's omitted somewhere around 4,000 values. So the next thing we're going to do is type summary flows. This is probably one of my favorite features of R is it seems to be really geared towards statisticians or data scientists because there's a lot of functions that give you easy graphing, easy statistical analysis. Doing a summary on a data frame gives us pertinent information for each of the types of columns. So you'll see in ID, the minimum value we have is 33 and the maximum value we have is 6,103. But if you look at the flows data in the environment section in the top right, it has 6,071. Well, so that means what happened to data values 0 through 32, and is that offset enough to equate to a max value of 6,103? The other really interesting thing is you can see the location, water systems prototype, has 6,071 values. So there is only one location, and every occurrence of our telemetry events happened in that exact location. The next extremely interesting item from my perspective is this water flow. This is kind of our key area of interest. We can see that our minimum value is 0 liters per minute, with our maximum value being 84.84 liters per minute. 84 liters per minute, looking at the size of those tubes, is quite fast, and our pump isn't some sort of like super pump, so you know we've immediately got some sort of odd values coming in here. But you can see that the average value is around 7.8, and then it gives you your nice quartile ranges. So we can see immediately that our data is slightly right skewed. Really interesting data that we can get with a single line of code. So being able to have these capabilities for me is quite revolutionary. So the next thing that we want to look at is the summary of the water flow telemetry data itself. This is useful if you have a data frame that has a bunch of different columns. So instead of looking at the summary of all of your columns collectively, you can take a look at just a single column and get the same data that you would for that particular column in the data frame. So we'll see when we execute the line 23 summary flows water flow, we'll see that we get the same exact summary with the min, first quartile, median, mean, third quartile, and maximum values. The next thing that we might be interested in is the disparity of our data. We might want to know how variant it is, so we'll calculate the variance. What variance is for each number in the data set, we subtract the mean from that number and square it. Then we add up all of those numbers and divide by the number of numbers, or calculate the mean of the square of the difference between the mean and each particular value. This is called variance. And this gives us a really good view as to how different our data is from the mean value. So if, for example, our variance was zero, that would mean that all of our values are exactly identical. The next item of interest for us would be the standard deviation. What the standard deviation is a way to look at the disparity of the data in a normalized way, back in the same magnitude of the data that we're actually looking at. Variance, if you recall, was the difference between the mean and each current value squared and then averaged. Standard deviation then takes the square root of that, therefore bringing it back into the same realm of magnitude of the original data. This gives us something to kind of say, oh, well, you're a certain number of deviations away, therefore you're outside of the normal range of values that I might find intriguing. In this case, we'll see that our standard deviation is about 1.7. Another common thing that we might need to do when doing exploratory analysis is to do some basic filtration. So what we're going to do first is show the number of rows in a basic in the data set, as well as do a dot plot of that data in the data set. So we'll see that the in row function calculates the number of rows, and we'll see that that is 6,071. And the next thing that we'll want to do is type the plot command, and plot will create a dot plot of the values that we have. And we can see here that our chart goes from 0 to 84-ish. You know, it'll go from the minimum to the maximum, which we saw in the summary, with a large quantity of our data looks to be somewhere between 5 and 12 or so, with a fair number of outliers over to the right-hand side. So to showcase some basic filtration, I've picked a semi-arbitrary number, 9. It's just a little bit over our third quartile, and we're going to filter the flows data set to only rows that contain a water flow value that is less than 9. That'll get all the other data that's over that out of the data set. And when we plot this, we'll see that the resulting plot gives us a little bit more of a fine-tuned view on what that data looks like. When we run the in rows, we will see that there are in fact a reduced number, 6,063. The next thing that we might want to do is create a box plot. What a box plot is going to do is showcase the summary numbers in a more visual way. So we can see that the box itself is defined by the first and third quartile, while the actual lines themselves are one or two standard deviations away. I can't remember with the way that the R plotting actually did, with anything outside of that being considered outliers, and those will be drawn on the graph as dots. Now, what we've noticed with a lot of the plots that we've been drawing is that it's difficult to get a good view of the data due to the dispersion of the data. We have a significant number of outliers primarily on the right hand side, but we also have some on the left. So what we'll want to do is begin by creating an outlier threshold. We'll create a new variable called outlier threshold, and we're going to calculate the standard deviation and multiply that standard deviation by 1.5. 1.5 is kind of an arbitrary-ish number. You know, sometimes outliers are considered anything outside of one standard deviation, sometimes out of two standard deviations. 1.5 is halfway in between that. It seems like an acceptable number. So when we calculate that, we can see in the environment section of our studio that outlier threshold contains a value 2.56. The next thing to do is to calculate the mean. We're going to create a new variable, m, and we're going to store into that variable the calculation of the mean across the flows data set. What this is going to allow us to do is the combination of the threshold and the mean means that we can add or subtract the threshold to the mean, and values that are outside of that range are going to be considered our outliers, and we will filter those from our data set in a similar fashion as we did earlier. The next thing that we do is we create a new variable, filtFlows, which stands for filtered flows. And we're going to store into that variable the result of filtering out all rows of data from the flows data frame that are less than the mean minus the outlier threshold. So data that results in the filt flows variable is going to be any values that are greater than the mean minus the threshold, so approximately 5.2. The next thing we're going to do is filter out all data that is greater than the mean plus the outlier threshold, so 7.8 plus 2.5, somewhere around 9-ish, and store that back into the filt flows variable. So to kind of showcase this a little bit, let's go ahead and do a summary of the unfiltered data set's water flow, as well as a summary of the filtered data set's water flow. What we can see when we execute both of those summaries is that the minimum value and the maximum value for the unfiltered data set is 0 and 84 respectively, while the filtered data set has a minimum value of 5.3 and a maximum value of approximately 9. So we can see that we've already reduced our data set down to values that we are a little bit more interested in. So we can already see the old box plot on the right-hand side when we executed box plot, including the outliers. So the next makes sense thing to do is to draw a new box plot which removes the outliers. As we can see in the plot section of RStudio is that we get a better view of the values we are actually interested in. The next thing that we might want to take a look at is line graphs. The reason we might want to look at a line graph is that all the previous graphs we've taken a look at have been all about data location and variance of data and the magnitude of data. What we can do with a line graph, especially when the x-axis is over time, is see trends, microtrends, when these events are occurring, and potentially another really important aspect is lack of data. So just an initial look at this line graph, which includes our outliers, is that we can see there's no data between about Friday evening all the way through Saturday mid-afternoon. In the sample, this is interesting because I showed this project off at the Houston Maker Faire, and well, that's a matter of me sleeping between demos. So, you know, Friday morning I was showing off the project, and then Saturday afternoon I was also showing off the project, so there's no data happening between those times. With a little bit of testing, it looks like Saturday morning. So by using a time series, we can see that yes, we can see flows happening, but there's also occurrences in which no data is there, and that could also be significant. In this case, it was me sleeping. Now, because the previous graph included outliers, it was difficult to get a really good view on the data itself, kind of more at a granular level. So by removing the outliers, we're able to scope the data back and get a better view on our line graph. When we do this, we can see a couple of black splotches occurring. These are potentially significant in that those splotches seem most dense between 7.8 and 8.5, as well as 6.9 and 7.8. If you go back to thinking about the way that the prototype works and the way that the telemetry is coming in, you have a full open and a full closed event. So perhaps what is happening is that when the valve is shut all the way off, we're probably seeing telemetry coming through at this 8-ish category, so between the 7.8 and the 8.5. And then when it's full open, we're probably seeing water flow come in between the 6.8 and the 7.8 category. Now, RStudio comes with a time series, and it also comes with the ability to plot a time series. The first thing you'll notice is this frequency thing, and why in the world is it 6,307,200,000? Well, frequency is asking for the number of occurrences in a year, and we're posting this telemetry data every 5 seconds. Therefore, if you do all the multiplication, it ends up being 6,307,200. Now, this particular plot I didn't find particularly useful for this exploration. It was just a little too small and our trends were a little minute. We can see over time some specific things happening. I think in a more realistic use case where we're looking for a trend of slow overtime degradation, this could be more useful. But in terms of what we're showing off today and this particular use case, it's not really that much of value, but I did think it was valuable to at least show it. Now, the last and final plot, I kind of saved the best for last is a type of plot I hadn't discovered until starting to explore R, and it's a density plot. And what a density plot shows you is the frequency of occurrences of values in a normalized fashion. So what you can see is that the value 1, for instance, occurred 10 times as frequently as the number 2, which occurred 3 times as frequently as the number 3. What I found particularly interesting with our data set, and right now we're looking at the one with the outliers, is that it appears that we have 4 peaks of interesting values. One of those peaks is at 0. And the other 3, when looking at the one with the outliers included, are a little bit more difficult to read. Now, why this is interesting to me is that at the end of the day, we want to identify or classify events. I was initially thinking to use a clustering analysis, and this is telling me that there are likely 4 clusters that we want with central points at those peaks. Now, the other thing that is interesting to think about is not only is there a full open, a full and a full close state for the valve, there is also a halfway in between. And I had sort of forgotten that during the demo, I put the valve at a halfway in between state. And I think that's what we're seeing as far as that middle peak. Now, the next thing to do is to take a closer look at the density plot, excluding our outliers. What this allows us to do is to get a better view as to where those peaks are actually occurring. We can see that our 3 peaks that we saw in the previous plot seem to be centered around 6.9, 7.8, and what looks to be around 8.5. So when taking a look at our clusters, what I think we would want to do is to identify in this particular use case that 7.8 is likely going to be our normal flow, with our 8.8 value being a clog scenario and our 6.8 being a leak scenario. Now you have to remember that when water is flowing through a system, if you clog one path, it's going to flow faster down the other path. And if you open a new path, it's going to flow slower down the one path that you're sensing. And these peaks are an indication of those 3 different states. So this concludes our video on exploratory analysis with R using telemetry data and water flow. The rest of this video is just quickly going through and deleting all of the assets that I created for the virtual machine, the network, so forth and so on. You can kind of watch it, but I'm flying through it because that's not the main point of the video. So tune back in. I'm going to post 1 video per month. It's going to be typically around IoT, data analysis, time series, that sort of thing. So keep checking back. At least once per month, there will be a new video, and keep tabs on it. We'll be right back.